Well, joining us on Front and Center, as he always does, is Howard Schwartz. Howard is the Executive Communications Director, Better Business Bureau, serving Connecticut. And Howard, welcome to Front and Center.
Thanks so much, Dan. Nice to be here.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about in the area of consumer issues and Better Business Bureau, et cetera. Let's begin with fake product reviews. What should we know about this? Fake seems to be in the news these days. In fact, fake news. What should we know about fake product reviews?
Well, fake product reviews, then, are a big deal. The time was we made and we still make our purchasing decisions and so on from word of mouth. And it used to be from a neighbor, a friend, a colleague, someone from the family. Well, now technology has enabled people to write pretty much anything they want, pretty much anywhere. And usually what we do is we'll go to a well-known site and we'll see a bunch of reviews ranging from 1 star to 5 stars. And unfortunately, there are people who are paid to write reviews. And unfortunately, a lot of folks figure, okay, well, it's got 5 stars a couple of times, I may as well go for it. Unfortunately, there are professional writers, some of which are hired by the companies they work for or hired by the companies or people in a company may actually write the reviews. And that is against the policies of most places. For example, Amazon tells them specifically, if you have any sort of monetary interest, then forget it. You can't do that. And they police it to whatever degree they do. And in fact, Amazon launched a lawsuit because there was a company actually selling reviews to other people. So let me give you an example. There are ways to spot these reviews to see that they're fake. And one of them, for example, is in the name. Reviewers' names, by and large, this is an anonymous exercise. So reviewers' names might be Love Toys or I'm Serious or things like that. But when you see a reviewer's name that includes 2 or 3 digits at the end, this is often the sign of a robotic review writing software. And when you think about it, that's kind of scary. We don't want that putting people out of work. But again, this means a couple of words might be changed and then it's posted on the site. And in some cases, the fake reviews can be spotted if the reviewer's name resembles a business or a product name. So look at the person who's doing the review. Another one, watch out for a glowing subject line and verbiage. Now, for example, you and I, when we would write something, as most of the listeners, we wouldn't say things like, this vacuum cleaner changed my life. That's patently, well, if that is the state of the person's life, perhaps that's true. But most consumers won't do that. And another giveaway is the repeated use of a product's complete name and detailed description. So the XYZ model 443 outperformed all other television sets in its category. Well, if you keep repeating that model number, again, that's not the kind of thing that you or I would do. That's market speak. And the marketing is in the message. If the review excludes, if it exudes blind product loyalty or uses marketing phrases such as integrate seamlessly or this is the kind of product you've been looking for, that was likely written by someone who's pushing the product. That being said, there are also excessively negative reviews that are posted by competitors trying to trash a product or a company. And they'll write something like, this product stinks, and without telling you why, and they'll put a hyperlink to their own site in what's kind of a turf war for people online. Look for unusual sentence structure. If it's awkwardly worded, vague, or praises its maker's company, it's probably planted. And I remember there was a reporter for the New York Times who once took a review and took the language, plugged it into Google, and with that exact same language was able to find the same review for different products and different companies. So that gives you an idea of how widespread this could be. And black or white reviews. Well, a consumer may have strong opinions for or against a company or its products, and we get very passionate about these things. Take a second look at any feedback that is excessively positive or negative. And once you understand how companies and hired reviewers work, you can often detect a feedback piece with a hidden agenda. And, you know, we might write a couple of paragraphs if we're really angry about something. That's not unusual. But when somebody writes four or five paragraphs or pages worth of review naming every person in the restaurant who served you, or how and they give just too many details that you and I might not, that's another indication. And I've written some long-winded, or I try not to, some long-winded reviews, but it's easy to tell by the way you say it. And I think that if people just use common sense, would I write something like that? Would you write? Would a friend write? That'll be a good idea as to whether or not to believe that review. So the question comes up, how do you know? How can you judge the veracity of these reviews that we see online? Well, I would say, number one, look at the reviews on the website where you want to buy this from, but then go around the internet and find other sources, other reviewers of the same product, and see if there are any problems, if they're praised, if they're criticized. And one way, you can certainly check them out with Better Business Bureau in Connecticut, but you can also look at other sites and see what people are saying. And it's unfortunate because so many people still make their buying decisions this way. And if we're not getting the proper information, we can be very, very disappointed.
No, there's no question about it. Information is power. But like you said, just don't go by a review that has four stars or whatever. In other words, you've got to do your homework on this, Howard.
Absolutely. And I would say that the truth lies somewhere between one star and five stars. So I know that sounds like a really big range, but again, look at the language. If someone simply says, I'm fed up, this product needs updating, well, that sounds fairly reasonable. Or this product is exactly what I wanted. That sounds reasonable too. So yes, you've got to do your homework and you'll feel better about it in the end.
Well, there's so much going on in the area of digital and the internet anyway, and not a day goes by, it seems, recently, Howard, where you don't hear on the news that something has been hacked, whether it's Yahoo or pick your account. What should we know about this expansion of hacking?
Well, I'll give you an idea. I did an interview with Bob Wilson from News 8 the other day, and we wanted to talk about hacking exactly that and how it's getting to a new level. And in general, we're calling for identity theft experts. They're renewing their call, rather, for everyone to protect themselves. We're talking about, and just so we know, we say hacks and those types of things. It's a criminal entry. Instead of breaking in the front door, they're breaking into your wireless device. And sometimes they're a heck of a lot smarter than we are, our wireless devices. And we know that there have been celebrity phones that have been hacked. There have been compromising pictures that end up on the internet. And that's just the start of it. Well, we have learned over the past year, and it was predictable, that smart devices were going to be the next target for hackers. Because now with smart devices, we are carrying around a computer in our pocket that's capable of making phone calls. It's not a phone with other abilities. So given the fact that we have so much information on our tablets and our smartphones, it is at risk. Some of the things we can do to minimize that risk is where we are and what we do. And what I mean by that is we see free Wi-Fi spots all over the place in libraries and, for example, bookstores or coffee shops or restaurants. The danger with those is you might see something like Joe's Restaurant Network, if you're looking for a Wi-Fi. And you might see Restaurant Guests as another one, and three or four networks. Well, if you press the wrong one, if somebody has made a fake network through their computer, they might be sitting next to you, they might be in the parking lot. If you click on the wrong network, then you're ending up giving a hacker instant access to all of your contacts, all of the contents of your phone. They can even take over your phone, for crying out loud, and call other countries. So when you are using Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi, don't be embarrassed. And in fact, we encourage you to ask, what is the name of your network, before you click on anything? And it's best probably not to do any sort of financial transactions, like buying something online or going somewhere where you have to put in a login name and a password. And in fact, when you're driving around or walking in a shopping center or a mall, one of the safest things to do is to turn off your Wi-Fi. because our telephones are radio transmitters and receivers. So the same way as we get information into them, we're pushing information out. Well, the part that goes in is what we have to worry about. And if we take the long view, Dan, the danger now is what's called the Internet of Things. Not my favorite expression, but that essentially means the wiring of all of our appliances and our cars to the Internet. So, for example, somebody who is able to hack, even right now there are many things that are available on the market, they will be able to, once our homes and lives are wired up, they'll be able to start your car. They'll be able to put the brakes on your car. They can turn off the alarm in your house. They can, I mean, you name it. Everything that we can do in our houses that's connected to the Internet can be potentially hacked. And one of the things that consumers are bad at is making sure that their Wi-Fi router is safe at home. And that means making sure that you've got a good password in there. And if you're not sure how to really secure it, call your wireless provider, and that's the best way. But with these smart devices coming in, we've got to realize that, first of all, when we get something, it usually has a default password. And I remember back when the sales terminals, the point of sales terminals where you swipe your credit card, well, there were a few retailers who got hacked simply because when they received the equipment, they never bothered to change that default password. And anyone who knew what they were doing was able to take control of those skimmers. So again, when you get something, change the password, make sure it's something that you're comfortable with. And finally, that content that you don't want to end up on the Internet. If you have photos that you don't want someone else to see, take them and then pull them off your camera and send them from somewhere else. You don't want that sort of information, obviously, to go public. Make sure that there's a password on your smart device, and think very carefully about the things you don't want people to see. If you've got password, logins, banking information, all those sorts of things in your contacts, that's open to anyone who manages to get into your phone. That being said, there are some free and paid applications that you can buy that'll store your passwords, and you can use it on any browser. And the nice thing is they're not storing any of this information on your computer. It's done in a remote server. So, again, this is called password management software. If you Google it, you'll find a whole bunch of choices, and it'll take that off your mind, as well as keep the passwords and logins on your phone or tablet private. And that, get that stuff out of your contacts. It really shouldn't be there because you're just taking a big risk.
Howard, a couple of questions in this area, and we're talking with Howard Schwartz on Front and Center, Executive Communications Director, Better Business Bureau, serving Connecticut. One, a lot of times if we are in an area where there's public Wi-Fi and we go to log on, we're asked if we have a preference whether we want our device to be discovered in public. If obviously we choose not to have it discovered, does that protect us at all?
It protects us to a good degree. The problem is, anywhere you go, if there are nearby networks, then you could end up with, they can't discover you. But I'll be honest with you, Dan, if you go on the Internet and you Google the right things or use Bing or whatever, this sort of information is available. You have to have a degree of sophistication. But I'll tell you, if you walk through a mall or any of the folks who are listening, just turn on your Wi-Fi and look at how many people's phones, their wireless networks will pop up. And that makes it really easy. So you're right. Again, I would turn off my Wi-Fi, but if they offer you the opportunity to not be seen, that's also something you can control within your phone. And one of the things that I do with mine is I turn off location services. I don't want other people or stores or whatever to be able to track me to where I'm going. And there are things like that. And again, check your manufacturer's websites to keep your phone safe. And the feature you're talking about, don't make public your Wi-Fi name or your phone name, that's a really good step to take. And there is one other. If you look in the settings, or only accept cookies from parties that you know. Like on a computer, you can get programs that will clear these cookies. And it is very nice, again, that they're offering you the opportunity to remain anonymous. Just, you know, the restaurant itself may not do anything, but someone else potentially can. So I would say that's a good feature, and I'd like to see more of that.
You know, the other thing is, and it doesn't matter whether you're out in public or you're at home logging into your Wi-Fi, when you see a domain name, now, as you know, most domains begin with HTTP, but if it's HTTPS, which the S stands for secure, is it really more secure than a domain that begins HTTP?
Yes, it is. And a growing number of sites put HTTPS, and you know it because it's got a little padlock graphic next to it. What the S means is secure, and what this, it's called a protocol. What it does is it scrambles all of the information that you send from your computer to, for example, a store's computer, an online store, or if you're routinely searching somewhere. So this information becomes scrambled by the HTTPS so that anyone who tries to break in or gets the signal from your cell phone, it's going to be gibberish. It will mean absolutely nothing to them. So it's a great feature. This also helps folks who are afraid of doing online banking, as a good example, because they're worried about the threats from it. Well, the threats for online banking are no worse, probably a lot. Banks are a lot safer than other folks that you're working with, who you might be dealing with. So HTTPS, before you ever put in any sort of personal information, if you don't have that option to use a secure connection, I would move on to another site. And the more that you look for them, by the way, the more you will see HTTPS. Finally, the internet is starting to get secure, but we've always got to be a few steps ahead.
No question about that. Well, speaking of the internet and smartphones, and this is the time of year when people do buy smartphones as gifts or give smartphones as gifts. What should we know? What are some of the myths and truths about smartphones?
Well, let's just go back a few weeks, and we know that Samsung Galaxy Note 7s were catching fire, and the company did a fix, sent them out again on the market, and those caught fire too. And then they did the right thing. They just yanked it off of the internet they yanked it off the shelves completely. But also, people should know that the very first phones to catch fire were iPhones, were Apple phones. And in recent weeks, I think it was a week and a half ago, we found out that people had managed to put spyware and malware and viruses into applications that were in Google Play or that were in the Apple iStore. And up until now, the Apple iStore has been fairly secure, but this shows us that pretty much anyone can do anything they want if they're trying hard enough. So what we've got to take a look at is what is causing the problem? Why are these phones catching fire or blowing up? We'll start with the battery. And when they opened up the Galaxy phones that caught fire, their preliminary determination is the batteries were catching fire and spreading to the rest of the phone. And their second preliminary conclusion is that one of the reasons it happened is because the engineers did their best to push as much as they can and as many features as they can into a smartphone and get what they need from the battery. And unfortunately, as space gets smaller, you have to deal with an important issue with today's rechargeable batteries. Now, you remember the old alkaline ones? They lasted a few months and then
right.
They died. Well, now we've got these lithium-ion batteries. They are very powerful. They're also very delicate. And in a case like Samsung's Galaxy or Apple's original iPhones, you had a situation where people weren't really aware of how delicate these things were. And in some cases, it was a manufacturing problem. Some cases, if you drop these phones, and this is something to keep in mind, if you drop your phone every time you do and that battery takes a hit, there's a chance that it might damage something small inside of the battery, but that's leaving you open to it. To catching fire. So the myths and the truths about that. One of the first ones that came out actually was don't talk on the phone while it's charging. No, that's not really the case, and I understand people's fears about that. But what it seems is the experts are saying, if you use an aftermarket cable to charge it, and we're talking about a cable that's from a quality manufacturer whose name you know, those are all right, and you can talk on the phone while they're charging, as well as if you're using the company's charger. The problems happen when you use one of those $5 or $10 chargers that you get at a gas station or at a grocery store. Those are the ones that you should not be talking on the phone when you're using them. Another myth is that you have to use the manufacturer's cable. That's not true at all. Just don't use those cheapos. A myth is that it's dangerous to let a smart device charge all night. Well, the truth is you won't get a better charge by charging the battery for an extended period, but there's no additional danger because of this type of battery. They put special circuits in the phones to stop the charging when it's full. And there's another myth that you should discharge your battery completely before recharging. You don't have to do that anymore, not with these batteries. Charge the phone anytime you like, and some folks say, in fact, if you let your battery drain down to 10%, that can cause problems with the phone's operation. So these batteries don't have memories like the old ones, where you had to have a certain sort of protocol for charging them. And the last piece of advice that Better Business Bureau would give is, because these batteries are so delicate and generate so much heat, every time we drop them, there's a danger. So if you're going to buy a used phone, it may have been in a case. If it wasn't in a case, start looking for indications that the phone has been dropped, if there's a ding or a scratch or those types of things. Because now that we know that the battery is an issue and that it's fragile, we should be very, very careful about what we do.
Howard, it's obviously the holiday season, as the song goes, and that means holiday wine bottle exchanges. Here's one. Give one, get 36 back. What's up with that?
That's a great deal, if only it were real. Yeah, there's social media. There are postings on there similar to the old chain letters we used to get. But it looks like a pyramid scheme, according to authorities, because eventually somebody is not going to get anything for it. And it just doesn't make sense that you would get 35 or 36 bottles of wine if you send out six bottles or one bottle or whatever. It is reminiscent of the chain letters, but these folks are raking in significant amounts of money and gifts. And at the top of the pyramid, they're also looking for personal information. There's another scam similar to this wine bottle exchange, also on social media, and it's called the Secret Sister Gift Scheme, in which people are urged to send $10 to receive up to 36 gifts in return. We would all like to get something for free, but you and I have discussed this for years, Dan. It just doesn't happen. The United States Postal Inspection Service says gambling, pyramid schemes, and gift chains like this are illegal. And pyramid schemes are against the law, whether it's by mail or email or social media channels. And that's especially if the organizers are asking for money or other items with any sort of a value or the assurance of a generous return for people who participate. So a couple of quick tips here. Check with Better Business Bureau before getting involved in any sort of suspicious and possibly illegal activity. And again, let's go back to the social media. What are they offering? Is it unbelievable? Best way to avoid these scams? Ignore it altogether, even if it comes from a friend, because your friend may not know that it's a scam. Chain letters via social media and U.S. mail that involve money or valuable items and promise big returns, as we said, are also illegal. If you start a chain letter, and it would be interesting if this would work on social media, that's what this seems to be, or send when you're breaking the law, and the chances are you'll receive little or no money on your so-called investment. And some chain letters will try and win your confidence on social media by claiming they're legal and endorsed by the government. If you find some of these things, let your friends know this is what's going on. Stay away from it. We all want to help ourselves in this case, but we'd also like to help other people and help them prevent getting stung by these types of things. It's just terrible. Let's be safe and be safe on social media, especially with photographs, posting those types of things, and we're going away for 2 weeks. Well, if you tell that to people on your social media page and there's other identifiable information, you're opening up your front door to have someone come in and take their time robbing your house.
Howard, we have about a minute left. What can you tell us quickly about scam warnings in regards to charities?
Very important. At this time of year, we're very generous. A lot of charities are canvassing. We know that they are allowed to call us. They're exempt from the Do Not Call registry. However, you are never really sure who's on the other side of the telephone. So if they say they're, and we always encourage people to never do business on the phone unless you initiate it. The best thing to do for a charity is if you want to contribute, you can visit our charity arm, give.org, G-I-V-E, look up the charity, or simply go to the charity of your choice and pay that way rather than responding to someone who calls. That's just way too dangerous, and it makes a victim out of you as well as the people you're trying to get the money to.
And Howard, if anybody wants to get any more information, what's the website they could log on to?
It's bbb.org/CT, or you can call us 24 hours a day at 860-740-4500. And Dan, we're always happy to help.
Howard, as always, thanks very much for joining us on Front and Center, and season's greetings to you and yours.
And the best to you and the listeners as well. Thank you, Dan.